Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. I want to go over some things today. First of all, I will say the people are the government. And when rights are exercised, positive changes can happen in the prisons and in the communities. We have a lot going on in this country and around the world lately, too much. One of the things that we need to do is start looking at the mass incarceration in the United States of America. But we also have to look at oversight. We need oversight of the prisons around the country. And I'm going to say one thing. I, of all people, would be the first to say pedophiles should be punished. But I want to say something right now. I heard on the news about this Larry Nassar, the doctor, the disgraced sports doctor, who went to prison for the sexual assault of a lot of these young females that were in the gymnastic program. And as many of you have heard, he was stabbed numerous times. No one deserves to be treated inhumanely once they have had their rights taken from them. We have people incarcerated who are serving life and life without parole sentences, as this doctor was given many life sentences. But it doesn't entail being stabbed numerous times. It doesn't entail being beaten and abused in the prison. And this is why I think it's very important to have oversight in the prisons around this country, because if the staff can turn a blind eye, if the prison officials can completely ignore these things, then something is wrong with them as well. The people are the government, and if our legislative members are not doing anything about it, we need to start making calls. We need to start challenging them as well. This is the United States of America. Human rights violations are always talked about in other countries, when in this country it gets ignored and our presidents go over to other countries to talk to them about their human rights violations. We have mass incarceration. Those other countries do not. We have high rates of suicide. Other countries do not. We have people that are targeted. In other countries, they're not. So the United States of America has a major problem. And we also have epidemics in this country of mental illnesses and addictions. If our government has the only option or alternative to all of these issues that are going on in this country, just throw them in prison and lock the key, throw away the key. It seems like that's what our government's doing. Anybody can do that. Child in elementary school can do that. The problem we need to start looking at is how do we address these issues? Nursing homes, residential treatment facilities. And if staff cannot control in these mental institutions or these hospitals, as they say they're getting more violent, then the staff needs to be trained more. These people are sick. These people are sick and they need the help. They don't need to be thrown into prison and be beaten and stabbed. And everybody turns a blind eye. Came from abusive homes, came from drug addicted homes and communities. And yet no one looks at these things once they end up stumbling and going to prison. No one looks at this. But a doctor goes to prison for doing something that a lot of people are incarcerated for as victims. And this doctor gets stabbed multiple times. And it's not only this doctor, there are so many other people in prison who are being violated, who are being abused, tormented, tortured. In the United States of America, we have a country that's full of vengeance and retaliation, hatred. And let a few people start talking about someone they don't like or a group they don't like or another country they don't like, and all of a sudden you have the whole world against that country. We don't know what's going on with Russia or Ukraine, but the whole world now has turned against Russia without even giving that country a chance to speak out. We also have countries, including the United States, where there's government employees who were once actors, comedians, entertainment. It's very easy to set up a stage and make something look 10 times worse than it is. And I've seen that happen so many times with prisoners. Prisoners commit a crime, and the first thing the media does, because this is what law enforcement has them do, is make those individuals that are on the run or they have committed a crime, make them look 10 or 20 times worse than they are. I've seen pictures of people who were offenders. They put in the media. They put on the internet. I don't know how they do it with the graphics, but they make these people, they do something to make them look 10 times worse than they are. Don't believe everything you hear. And don't take sides to go against someone because the multitude is going against them. We have people voting for Democrats or Republicans who know nothing about what they're voting for, but because their peers are voting for these people, they're voting for them without knowing anything about these people. We live in a country where everyone is quick to judge. Everyone can't remain neutral. They have to get involved and take sides. And that's what they call insecurity or ignorant, uneducated. So they're listening to people they think are educated, which those people probably are educated, to manipulate. I have to laugh when I heard about NATO. You know, Ukraine is going to be part of NATO, but they can't be part of NATO right now because the war is going on. But this is the main reason why they want them to be part of NATO, because once they're part of NATO, all the countries can go after Russia. So if that's what they want, bring Ukraine into NATO. Don't wait until that more money is sent out, because that's what it seems like. They're waiting until all the money runs out in the United States of America or other countries before they go into NATO. We're looking at sickness. We're looking at dysfunction, and it's getting kind of tiring. Just like when you turn the news on all the time. This thing with Trump has been going on for 7 or 8 years. You know, they're not doing anything. They're just trying to be having something to talk about on the media. If they want to talk about anything, they need to go into the prison, and they need to give these people a voice. They need to get the other side to the stories they've been, the one-sided stories they've been reporting. Mental illnesses are a major problem in the U.S. prisons today. Department of Mental Health needs to get involved. Counseling agencies, substance abuse treatment programs. There needs to be oversight. Needs to be oversight in the penal system. People think because someone wears a uniform or has a title that they're very experienced and qualified, but they don't have a clue what they're talking about. And they have a piece of paper. Anybody can get their degree in a certain field, but unless they've lived it, unless they've been there and done it, unless they've actually put themselves in front of the people that they're working with and see exactly what those people are going through, ask them questions, let them speak, give them a voice. But no, if someone has a piece of paper, that piece of paper tells it all. I got my degree. I did my 4 years in college. No, that's not how it works. It's like people, pastors and priests. Let me tell you about pastors and priests. They are out there preaching, and they have their degrees or certificates or whatever from the schools of theology. But they're learning from man just like we all are learning from man. They're learning from other people that have read the Bible. And a lot of these pastors and priests are preaching things that they're hearing from their superiors. But you need to seek and search. You need to go in and you need to go through the Bible with a fine-tooth comb to learn what these scriptures are trying to say. Scriptures certainly are not trying to say to turn a blind eye when somebody is being stabbed, when somebody is being ganged up on, when the multitude is taking sides with one. Exodus chapter 23, verses 1 to 3. Thou shalt not go with the multitude to do evil against one. But that's what we're living amongst today. You don't feel, many don't feel they can fit in unless they take sides. But yet they would get so much more respect if they didn't take sides. If they remain neutral, if they don't know the whole facts, if they don't know the people they're going against. I felt bad for that doctor because not only did he have his life taken away by going to prison for so many life sentences, which they gave him more life sentences than any man on earth will live anyway. But to know that he's being attacked, beaten, and stabbed, and no one cares. Human rights organizations should be in there. Human rights organization to me is just a name, a title. We don't have it in the United States anymore. We don't have compassion, understanding. And we have people thrown into prisons for life and life without, and even on death row, with no hope of ever being free, with no hope of ever being able to adjust. And yet other countries are so successful and the work they do with their incarcerated population. Franz Dow will be on again tomorrow. He's doing a series for the month of July. Every Wednesday, he's going to be talking about something else. But he has visited the prisons in the United States, and he's working with people in Texas, advocates. He talks about the penal system. He talks about the prisons. He talks about the failures in the United States prisons. He talks about the things that should be going on that are not going on. If other countries can run their prisons humane and treat their prisoners humane, why can't we? And right now, this country and around the world, they're on the verge of a World War III. We're looking at an earth, we're feeling it. The earth is at its hottest peak in history, global warming, nuclear weapons. There's so much more that we need to worry about right now than attacking people we do not know or cheering on people that are being abused or tormented, tortured. There's so much more. And what's going to happen in the last minute, when everything starts to really fall apart for the world, everyone's going to be scrambling to be with people that care about them. And you're going to find out when that time comes, everybody's for themselves. But at the same time, when a disaster happens worldwide, a lot of people are going to be going to wherever they can for help. They're not going to be looking at anybody because of their social status or their incarceration or their pigmentation. They're going to be reaching out to anybody they can to help them. Because as it says in the Bible, it's going to be worse than Sodom and Gomorrah. They're talking about these weapons now they're going to be using that have been banned by 100 countries. And these weapons, when they get shot, when they get released, not all of them are going to go off. And they say some innocent people, at some point in time, citizens, can be walking and it can detonate by walking on one. What are we doing? What are we doing in another country when our own country is falling apart? What are we doing spending all this money when a president wants to do Russia in, then let Ukraine join NATO now, not when the war is over, but now, so that they can all go in and do whatever it is that they want to do once Ukraine joins NATO. They can go in and they can get this thing over with once and for all, instead of letting it drag on and on and on for years. We have a government that keeps talking about all these indictments and everything. They bring somebody in, take fingerprints, they don't even show them, and then they let them go home. Every time you turn the TV on, it's the same old news. And yet, when rights are exercised, positive changes can happen in the prisons and in the communities. But who's exercising their rights? We sure are not. We're not exercising our rights. We're too busy trying to keep up with the Joneses or trying to side with those that have a problem with somebody or another group or another organization. Too busy taking sides against people we don't even know or people that have done nothing to us, just so we'll fit in with the multitude that is doing all this evil against someone they don't know. I don't know how long it's going to take before people are going to wake up and see something needs to be done, and something needs to be done quickly. As I said last week when I talked about the Armageddon, you can't change your mind at the last minute when this world starts to fall apart, when we have this World War III. No one can change their mind at the last minute while they're begging or crying out to God to save them from the nuclear weapons or from whatever else is going on in the world. The air is not even safe to breathe anymore. Everywhere you go, it's 90 degrees, 120 degrees in some places. The weather we have never had to experience, even in a lot of these states and around the world. We're looking at the sharks coming closer to shore. The water's getting warmer. People are getting bitten by sharks. And then look at these children. In the last few months, there was a four-year-old. And there was a seven-year-old little boy, 4 years old, and a little girl, 7 years old. They were autistic, nonverbal. And they wandered from the house, and they were both found in the river, in the water. Why would anybody not be watching children that can't speak and that have a serious disability? And I feel bad as well as everybody else for the family because they made a mistake not watching their children. In this day and age, everyone has to be very cautious because this world today is not like it was years and years ago. There's so much going on. And as I say, we need to stop judging others. We need to stop taking sides. We need to be neutral in everything that we do, everything that we hear about, everything that we say. There are people who are in prison because they were victims before becoming offenders. Whether they grew up in a well-to-do home or they grew up in the ghettos of the city, everyone has some reason or some downfall, some experience, negative experience that they've had to encounter. And yes, they can come from well-to-do homes. And unfortunately, a lot of these well-to-do homes, they spoil their kids. They give them so much. But the one thing that they need most is the love from their parents. Not to be having their parents teaching them how to hate others that are different. They need that love from their parents. And once they get that love from their parents, they're going to share that love with everybody, not just a certain group or certain people or a certain age or a certain gender or whatever. And people taking sides. And now, even the women's rights are being violated. Because we have a government now that's going to tell women how they can do or what they can do with their own bodies, with their own beliefs, with their own everything. That's between women and God. Everything that we do is between man and God. We have no right to tell somebody what they should be doing, or to force someone, or to deny someone, or deprive someone. We have no right. We are all sinners. We have all messed up royally. And we all have to go before our Maker when that time comes. And I'm going to say this again. You may not believe it, but that time is right here and now. It's just a matter of time before everything explodes. And they've spoken about this so many times when they've talked about these nuclear weapons. If one country starts using nuclear weapons, the whole world is going to be going off with these nuclear weapons. I don't know why violence is so important to our government that they have to go looking for it in other countries. And that seems exactly what it's all about. Power and fame. One president leaves, the next president that comes in wants to give a name to whatever it is, from Obamacare to Bidenomics. One gets rid of Saddam Hussein. And the other one wants to, right now, they've been talking about how they went out and they killed these leaders in other countries. Al-Qaeda, not Al-Qaeda, ISIS or whatever. What is it all about? Every president wants to outdo the other president. Every party wants to outdo the other party. Every person wants to fit in with their groups or their cliques. What's that all about? It doesn't even make sense. That cure that when, and I'm not speaking of all of you, just they used to say if the shoe fits, wear it. Out there that feel like they have to take sides to fit in. They have to agree with something they don't even know anything about. But they feel as though they will fit in if they go along with it. There could have been communication, negotiation between Ukraine and Russia. Vladimir Putin and Vladimir Zelensky. They could have sat down and they could have worked it out if everybody just stayed out of it. Because I remember hearing something about that for a short time until our government kept talking about it and kept sending money over there, weapons over there, money and money and money. It's like every few weeks they're talking about sending more weapons or money over to Ukraine. People in this country cannot even afford anymore to do anything. We are strapped in this country, and it's not getting any better. But reducing the population in the prisons would start saving a lot of money. Because even if these elderly and these disabled in wheelchairs, those with dementia and Alzheimer's in the prisons, the elderly, even if they release them and put them in nursing homes, it's going to be much cheaper than it is to keep them in prisons. Much cheaper. I pray that everyone will think about these things. Hello? Is somebody calling in?
Hi, Leona. It's Donna Winant. How are you? I just got your email.
Hi, Donna. I'm glad you came on. I wanted to ask you if you would, because, you know, I was talking about the mentally ill in this country. It's a serious issue. And right now, there's so much going on in the world. And I was talking about that doctor, too, sports doctor that was recently stabbed multiple times. I feel that, like I say, I'm against a lot of pedophiles that are walking the street that are not serving their time. But when somebody does go to prison for their crimes, they should not be stabbed the way they were. And that man, that doctor, has had to have had a psychological issue to do what he did as well. But we have people in this country, in the prisons throughout the country, who have mental illnesses and addictions, and it needs to be addressed. And I was talking that Department of Mental Health needs to be involved. So can you talk a little bit about your organization, what you've been doing, and try to update us a little bit on what families and individuals against mental illnesses has been doing?
Sure. I have a loved one at Bridgewater State Hospital, and I have observed firsthand that these very seriously mentally ill persons, when they're treated well, and it's not doesn't always happen at the hospital, and in the right medication, but with family support, they are the sweetest, kindest, they're generous, they're bright, and they should not be punished for criminality when they have a serious brain disorder. So I founded Family and Friends of Individuals with Mental Illness, and it's specifically to advocate for those who are justice involved. So what I saw or see is that these people who have serious mental illness, sometimes they don't even get sent to Bridgewater. They go directly to jail or prison. But what they do at Bridgewater State Hospital is they give them some kind of treatment, not necessarily always therapeutic, but there are groups and programs. But they do it so that the person can be restored in a legal sense to serve in the criminal justice system, to punish them for acts that were committed under brain disorders and serious mental illness and psychosis, which is that break in reality of thought and behavior and mood. So I've been fighting for a very long time to get, if they're going to not have psychiatric hospitals where they can contain people, and they insist on putting people with mental illness in a prison or a jail or a prison, they must serve these people with a correlation with the Department of Mental Health, to have mental health units where these people can be stabilized and treated humanely. So that's my passion, Leona, and I just keep fighting. And I 2 weeks ago, I testified at the State House, and it's not my first time to testify. And I remember testifying saying, it's been 4 years since my grandson, you know, has been in Bridgewater Hospital. And then it's been 7 years, and now it's 9 years, and so little changes. And I'm just trying to poke people to be humane, to be compassionate. And I do see some progress. It's not all futile to advocate and to speak up and to be courageous and to, you know, stand up for these people, these individuals who are vulnerable. I started art classes at Bridgewater State Hospital, and I did my 70th class last night. And the interesting thing is that the assistant administrator, who actually is a very compassionate, family-oriented problem solver, you know, there's many problems at Bridgewater State Hospital, but she's one of the shining lights. And she was so excited at being included in my art classes. I made her an art cafe waitress. we made meals out of images from packages, food packages. It was really creative, and I had her wear a cafe hat, and then she became my bingo caller extraordinaire. We played art bingo, so I bought oodles and oodles and oodles of stickers of all different genres and motifs. So each person would choose which stickers they want, whether it was cute little polar bears or birds, or so they would use those stickers to play bingo. And later I would assemble all these bingo cards, and they came out beautiful, and we made artworks out of it. But last night, for the first time, we were allowed to use clay, Play-Doh, and we made creative creatures. And one person made a prince with a crown, and he had his tongue, big red tongue curled out, catching a fly. It was a frog with the prince's hat. So it was just, and they were really great. So, you know, we're making some inroads because this was never allowed under the Department of Correction at Bridgewater State Hospital. And we're just pushing for, you know, small things like that versus big things. And one of the big things, and Leona, you thank you for, you know, applauding our newsletter, because one of the things we're doing as a family advisory council in conjunction with the prison system is asking that family members in every jail and prison really have contact. They can call and give concerns and find out how their loved one's doing. And, you know, it took 8 months to get a pair of eyeglasses for a gentleman at Old Colony Correctional Center. And he was practically blind without the eyeglasses. 8 months, and it was only after really pushing hard that we finally got him a pair of glasses. And he was so slow going down the stairs because he couldn't see that he got pushed down the stairs one day. So these are the things, you know, we want family access and we want humane treatment. We want basic things like eyeglasses and shoes, proper shoes. My own husband had broken a hip roller skating with our grandsons. And because of that, one leg is a little shorter than the other. And thank goodness he's able to get an inset for his shoes. And, you know, so these basic needs for human beings should be in the jails and prisons. And I don't believe that someone, yes, they're already in a punitive, you know, they're already in a punitive setting. They're so visually deprived, and their choices are deprived, and their family time is a deprivation, and they're deprived of so many things. So don't punish them with brutality or violence or cruelty. You know, the DOC is supposed to provide safety, and you're talking about that doctor, Dr. Larry, and I can't think of his last name, but you're right, he shouldn't be stabbed. He should be protected. It's supposed to be, you know, like a community of police officers. So how was he stabbed? They'd have to be more mindful to keep safety. That's their job. So that's about all of it for now.
You know, Donna, you mentioned being able to call your loved one. They have, so you can email them now. They should have, as you say, they should be able to allow to have family members or loved ones call them at certain times or whatever. There's just so much out there that needs to be done.
Right. And it's heartbreaking, you know. It's just heartbreaking to have your loved one taken away and to not know if they're safe or if they're okay, and to have that clinician or that social worker that can be contacted when there's real concerns. You know, that's something that is starting to happen with FEMI, with my organization. And thanks to some very dedicated steering committee members who are following through, and they're doing the work and they're taking the notes and they're setting up the policies and doing all those good things so that families can have access to their loved ones. And I'm also for these free phone calls. I know Representative Ruth Balzer, among other things, is working toward free phone calls, as well as other legislators. And we just have to do these things. We have to do these things.
And I noticed Families Against Mandatory Minimums also they've been putting things out there to support independent prison oversight. And it says conditions in prisons across the country are worse than ever. Most prisons are overcrowded and unsafe for both incarcerated people and the staff. And it says a lot of it lacks the adequate medical and mental health care. So I would love your organization and FAM and even NAMI working together to see that these things do happen, because it's very necessary the prisons are getting, especially now with this global warming, and around the world they're talking about the earth is at its hottest peak now and than ever before. And a lot of these prisons, like in Texas, I understand prisoners are dying because Governor Abbott hasn't really done much to allow for air conditioning. But with all of that, it just adds to all the stress and the frustration and the anxiety and the anger. And this is why I think that things are going to escalate if they don't start doing something about it.
That's correct. The family members, I belong to two groups, the one I founded and direct, which is FEMI, but also the Bridgewater Families Group. And these are just really motivated, dedicated, caring family members who have loved ones at Bridgewater State Hospital. And we have one in particular, Harry. His name is Harry. He's called in before. And he has really, really kept on Bridgewater State Hospital to make mitigation plans. They say they don't have the power grid to provide air conditioning, but these little cells, you know, some of the patients there have called it an oven and unbearable. And, you know, they're sleeping on a cement floor and sweating and, you know, in a 6x9 room. So we've made some progress where the windows are getting open. They are, during the day, trying to get the patients to the areas that can sustain air conditioning. They claim they cannot air conditioning, which may be the fact because it's an old building, and that's why we're working toward a new facility. But, you know, we worked really hard for 3 years just to get Gatorade and enough drinks and, you know, so people can withstand this crazy, crazy heat. And right now my husband got an injury, and he had to sleep in his recliner for 2 months. So I slept in the guest room next to his office with the recliner so that if he needed me during the night, I would hear him. And there's no air conditioning. And I just can't imagine having a serious mental illness and suffering day and night without air conditioning. And when we've spoken to some of the prison personnel, the real higher-ups, that they really could care less. They could care less. And it's heartbreaking.
You know, it needs to happen to them and their family members. Then they would start caring. That's the sad thing about it. They've never had to go through all of this. But I really think that Bridgewater State Hospital, and they should build a facility, a residential treatment facility, and have the mentally ill get rid of even Bridgewater. Get it off the prison grounds. Get rid of these prisons and stop building humane facilities that look like more like housing rather than prisons. And get these people. And another thing I was going to say, too, I understand there's a lot of empty prison cells in Massachusetts, and yet they're forcing people to double cell, and I don't think that's right. I think people should be allowed to make their own decision if they want to be double celled or not. But when you have a population of people incarcerated that are serving life sentences or long-term sentences, they should be allowed to have a single cell.
That's correct.
And the mentally ill, when you think about it, I don't know if you heard on the news about that man. He was mentally ill. He stabbed, I guess, some guy that he was living with. They had a disagreement, and he stabbed that person. And I don't know if it was in Revere or Chelsea or someplace like that. But that was a mental ill case, and he did. So he's probably going to be going to jail, too, prison at some point in time.
Yeah.
But these are things that we really need to start focusing on and challenging our lawmakers to start doing something about these things.
That's correct.
You mentioned they sleep on the floor. I remember, I believe it was in 2006 when I was training. It was a different medical provider, though. It was not WellPath. I have the paperwork here, but that's what we have to do is look in the cells, and this was a Bridgewater, and they'd be on the floor. Every 5 minutes, we have to write down what they were doing. If they were lying on their side or if they were standing up looking out the window, or if they were lying on their right. We had to write, document all of that. It was crazy. It was crazy. But
yeah. And, you know, they're quick to, if any tiny little infraction, think about if somebody were following us day or night, you know, and we get a little agitated or frustrated because something's not working or we break a dish or, you know, and somebody's marking every little thing. Every little human thing that we do, and then it's held against you. You know, if you have a bad day or you talk cross or it's just, and yet there's such a double standard. You know, the staff. There's been a staff member who really bullied my grandson, and his mom and I had to fight for 2 years, and he finally they moved him to a new unit, and she still gets to go into the new unit, and you know, she just screams at the patients, and yet they just allow her to stay in spite of the complaints, and I don't know. I just got to focus on the good people. There are some good, too.
I was just getting that paperwork of the medical provider that was there. They were from Virginia, but it was called the MHM Correctional Services, Inc. They were the contracted providers out of Virginia, Vienna, Virginia, that was working with the Department of Corrections in Massachusetts, and they were successful. They were very successful in what they were doing. So I don't know why they got rid of them and put WellPath in.
Wow.
These people were more focused on the mental health issues too.
I do have some good news in that we were told, and I'm trying to find my email, but we were told that the governor. The new governor is actually setting aside money for DCAM to check into the need and how to do a new facility for Bridgewater. So that would, you know, it's a start because the building is full of mold and toxins and, we're told by the Disability Law Center that the building itself is not safe for anyone. So you have this building that's physically not safe, and then you also have, you know, some mismanagement of medication, and you have some, ill-trained staff. There's an issue. I got a call from a family member today about a very serious issue, mismanagement of medication and then mistreatment of the same person. So he's going to be talking to Bridgewater State Hospital, the new administrator, tomorrow to see if anything can be, you know, addressed properly. And if not, he's going to have to take it to the Disability Law Center.
Jeez. I'm glad to hear that Maura Healey is doing something about that, because I was beginning to wonder if she was going to do anything to help with any of this in the penal system. And I voted for her. Everybody was saying vote for her because she's going to make some changes. And I'm hoping that she will. I'm really hoping that she will make some positive changes.
We're trying very hard to, make contact with her and, let her know what we need for the in terms of the continuum of care and mental health care for those who are incarcerated.
Yeah.
And I've often shared with you, Leona, that, you know, my first goal, my primary goal and my primary reason for advocating was to get that continuum of care across time, across the system, you know, no matter where in the criminal justice system someone was, to have that continuum of care, and that's proper psychiatric, clinical, physical care. And but by studying, you know, incarceration as a whole, it's like a horror show. And I see so many other needs, even for those who aren't mentally ill. I see needs for recovery and rehabilitation programs and, more humane treatment.
You know what? I'm one for pilot projects. I am definitely one for. And I was talking to Fran Dow, the 27-year warden from Amsterdam, about that last week. He spoke of pilot projects too. But one of the things I'd like to see happen is for our government to establish or initiate some pilot projects with perhaps some of these people that are in Bridgewater or that have a mental illness, if they did some kind of take a few of them to try to do a pilot project where they would actually be able to do more with them on the outside, you know, take them for a weekend and try to do some activities. Years ago, this was quite a few years ago, before I became a social worker, I worked for this counseling agency, and I was working as it was called CAP, Child Advocacy Program. And I was working it was one-on-one. So we would take these kids that mainly young, you know, little boys that had no father. And we would take them like fishing or take them for walks or take them to, you know, the movies or just do different things with them to see how they would respond, because a lot of them, they were quiet or they had anger problems or whatever. And I think a pilot project, even with the mentally ill, would be a good thing to have. And not only with the mentally ill, but with prisoners across the board.
I've been working on that I've been compiling all the different pilot programs from Agroponics, which is in Springfield, Massachusetts, where they have a greenhouse and they grow produce for their own jail and for the community. There's Houses of Healing, which focuses on, you know, forgiveness of yourself and others who may have hurt you. There's actually one by the Jewish group Chabad, and it includes Jews and non-Jews. And you can actually earn time out. It's a federal program. You can earn time out by completing this program. So I'm compiling as many programs as I can see. And with this Family Advisory Council, you know, as it gets more off the ground, I'm going to float some of these ideas and ask these jails that we're working with, these county jails, you know, who would volunteer to do which program as a pilot program. But, you know, and then hopefully expand it. I know at Old Colony Correctional Center, they train dogs, comfort dogs, and that's pretty, you know, that's pretty therapeutic for the guys who are able to do it.
You know, I love the dog program. You know, I think about it so many times, and I said, I wish they'd have it in more prisons, because I know for a fact, he loved animals, he loved them, and it's, to be able to work with the dogs, to be able to work with them, I think, would, like you say, it's therapeutic. And I think it's so important to keep them feeling like they still have some kind of contact with the outside, just by being able to train, you know, work with dogs. But I think it's two or three of them, as far as I know.
Yeah, so I pulled up my file of, you know, some of the programs that some of the jails are doing, and this one's, the course is called The Way to Happiness, and this man tells about his journey from hate and violence to hope and faith, and he'd been incarcerated in prison since he was 18 years and now 37 years old. So this is one of the course. Given that, he says, it gave back my hope and faith in getting out and going home again. And I'm trying to see what exactly they do there. But some of the, you know, he's learned how to respect, and they train and treat, you know, they talk about humane treatment, and he says, my daily life in prison dealing with guards and inmates are more direct and respectful to their feelings and a lot more polite. Staff can even see the change in my daily attitudes and communications. And wouldn't it be good if that were two ways, if there would be correction officers? And at the top of my file, Leona, it says, Leona says, have the, for these pilot programs, have the prisoners pick out the COs because they know the good ones. I've got that right on top of my file.
And you know, that's the truth, because if there was a pilot project and the prisoners were allowed to pick out the correctional officers that they want to be in that pilot project, I think that we'd get a lot more positivity in the project in itself. Because there are, as I say all the time, there are some awesome guards, correctional officers, and officials, but there's also a lot of corrupt and a lot of manipulative and a lot of abusive correctional officers as well. So if a pilot project was done and the prisoners were allowed to pick out the guards that they wanted, I think that we'd see some progress. I really believe that we would. And I think a lot of the organizations that you mentioned that you have together with legislature is another thing that should be done. I think the legislative members should sit down with people like yourself, your groups, and even the governor's office, you know, to come together and try to work together on a lot of these issues. That is where the success would come in. And now that we have a new governor, I would hope that maybe the legislative members will reach out to Governor Healey and also groups like yourself and come together and try to figure out ways to work on it. Because you're dealing with mentally ill, and the prisons are full of people with mental illnesses, whether it's minor, like serious psychological, whether it's serious depression, whether it's serious mental illness, mental problems. But it's something that needs to be discussed.
That's true. And back to some of these pilot programs, I'm looking through my file. At Springfield Prison, they did a coffee, it says Coffee and Corrections Cafe opens at Springfield Prison, and this was in December 2022. So what they do is, you know, they have and Bridgewater State Hospital has actually emulated that. So they allow the prisoners to earn, you know, some kind of a currency, and then they're able to purchase coffee from prison people who have learned how to be baristas. It's amazing. So good. And then there's Houses of Healing, and that is the one that, you know, people learn about forgiveness for themselves and others. There is this one, the first from, you know, motivated by the First Step Act of 2018, which provided federal inmates convicted of nonviolent offenses with the opportunity to earn time credit toward their prison sentence by participating in evidence-based recidivism reduction programs and productive activities. So this is the one where they do Torah study, which is basically, you know, sometimes they do the whole New Old Testament as the Torah, and sometimes it's the first five books of the Bible that, you know, is called the Torah. So I'm guessing it's probably the whole Old Testament. But what's nice is that, you know, it's for Jews and non-Jews, and it's just to help people to learn healthy coping skills. And that's how they, you know, they learn, just like that gentleman who said he learned how to respect the staff and the other inmates, you know, they learn these coping skills and they earn actual time out because of the First Step of 2018, the First Step Act. So there was something put in place federally to, you know, unfortunately it's only nonviolent crimes, and, you know, sometimes someone may have a violent incident, but that doesn't mean that they're a violent person, you know, for the rest of their lives. They might have had a violent altercation. So it's kind of too bad that it's limited. You know, and they should have specific pilot programs. Maybe I don't like the term anger management, you know, but more of, you know, how to handle frustration and stress and, you know, feelings of anger. That would be good.
I think if they treat them like they do in other countries, like they say, even in Norway, they've actually said it, that they treat them, they call them by first name. They don't call them by numbers or last names. You know, they talk to them every now and then. They carry on a conversation with them. They treat them like human beings. I think these people, no matter how bad they may have been or how fallen they are, I think treating them like they're still human instead of just throwing them in prison and then just completely treating them like they don't exist or they're animals. Many have been called animals. But I think if they started doing these pilot projects, I really think that we'll see some success in some of these projects that they have.
True, true. Yeah, I think I had a little bit of influence in getting Bridgewater to State Hospital to try this coffee program, so I'm pretty happy about that.
Yeah, I think
it's motivated some of the patients to go to programs. They actually get a check with their name on it, and then they can go on Fridays and purchase coffee with maybe Snickers cream flavoring or, you know, something that they really like, a nice quality coffee.
They need to come up with some kind of project and, you know, different things. Bring people, volunteers in that can actually, that have some experience in interacting with the incarcerated and have some experience in, you know, doing different things. Like you say, you do a lot of different things with your organization, and now you form two groups, your FEMI, your group, your organization, and also, you know, co-founding or co-working with another group. And keep networking, keep recruiting people to join, you know, your organizations or invite other organizations to come together so that all of you can start working with legislative members and the governor's office around a lot of these changes. That's what
right.
It takes. It takes teamwork, and that's what needs to happen. Now we have a governor that we trust. We have a governor that is workable, and we have legislative members that are working on prison reform and abolishing a lot of these things. So those are the ones that we all need to come together and try to work with and get them to, you know, to do more, to allow you to be able to do more as well.
Yeah, I was very happy, Leona, because I testified to have for an act to transfer Bridgewater State Hospital from the Department of Correction to the Department of Mental Health. And with me was NAMI, and NAMI has actually formed an alliance, a specific group. So NAMI has its own group made up of attorneys and family members and very important, you know, people with roles in NAMI, and they're advocating and they testified on behalf of this bill. So we had NAMI and we had myself, you know, representing FEMI and the Bridgewater family groups. And then we had, I don't know if you know Dana Mouch. She's the Massachusetts Association of Mental Health director, and she has a really strong background. And she gave a powerful testimony on behalf of moving Bridgewater from the Department of Correction to the Department of Mental Health. And then we also had the Disability Law Center. So there was really, a collaborative effort that day to pass this bill of Representative Ruth Balzer.
And I'll tell you, that's a good team. They're all well known. And I was going to ask you real quickly too, the Department of Mental Health. Now, when all of you were talking about transferring Bridgewater to the Department of Mental Health, what is the Department of Mental Health saying about all this? Are they in agreement?
They have not been in agreement. You know, I've been told they like the easier patients, although I don't know if it's ever easy dealing with people with mental illness. It takes work and care and time, and they're good at it, you know, from many accounts. Sure, they have their problems, but, you know, that is their area of expertise. And they're very reluctant, you know, very dismissive. With the first time FEMI met with them, they were just dismissive because they do not wish to deal with the forensic population. And now they're, you know, I think with all this pressure and all this advocacy, someone said, with Bridgewater State Hospital. They know the heat is on. We have a lot of now dedicated advocates, and they said, we've never seen, one of the higher-ups said, we've never seen advocacy like this before because we're really working hard. So, you know, advocacy matters. It really matters.
And I hope the pressure stays on Department of Mental Health because, unfortunately, as time goes on, we're starting to get less qualified people working in a lot of these areas. And when they're reluctant to working with forensics, you know, to me, that's shying away from the problem. Department of Mental Health is specifically for that, the mentally ill. And they cannot pick and choose who they're going to, you know, help. It's almost like the United States Postal Service, as I said last week. The United States Postal Service is supposed to serve the entire United States, but yet they say with mail tampering within the penal system, they say they bring the mail to the prison, but once it gets to the prison, it's out of their hands. Well, it shouldn't be. They should ensure that the people are getting their mail throughout the United States, not as far as a prison. And Department of Mental Health, the same thing. They're supposed to be the Department of Mental Health for the entire country, and yet they're trying to back away from a lot of the responsibilities in the performances that they do working for the Department of Mental Health.
Now, the interesting thing is because we have advocated so heavily, they're now giving lip service and, you know, saying they're open to it. We're a little skeptical, but FEMI actually has an upcoming meeting with them on the 19th, so we will see what happens. But, you know, what I want to do is say to them, look, you know, we admire you. We know that your regulations are better than the Department of Corrections. We know that your and it's true, your training is better than the Department of Corrections. We know that your de-escalation practices are better, you know, than the Department of Corrections. And by stroking their ego, especially since it's sincere, you know, I'm hoping to win them over and at least, you know, get them to be more amicable to the idea of taking on this population.
I think you're doing an awesome job. I'll tell you, Donna, we need more people like you and your groups because this country has a serious, serious problem, and it's not going to get addressed until people like yourselves start uniting, working together, working with legislative members working with the Department of Corrections officials. You know, it has to, in the governor's office, it has to be a united front to get any changes to happen. Department of Mental Health is where it starts. And also the American Psychological Association, they also need to get involved. They seem to be getting all this funding, but you never hear anything from them. And it's sad because they should be with Department of Mental Health and all of you, they should be working in unity with you.
That's true because, you know, you hear about the unions, the police officer unions, and, you know, the governor has to please this union and that union, and, you know, and then it's these big unions versus these individuals who are sick, you know, and vulnerable, and who's going to win? You know, too often it's the unions and the big money, and, you know, here we are trying so hard to fight. And, you know, Leona, I have my former next-door neighbors, and we're still very friendly. They were good people. And I just kind of peruse Facebook very quickly every day, kind of get, you know, a little news on my nieces and their kids. And here I see my neighbors now retired, you know, going here, going there, having nice dinners. And here I am in my retirement years, working away, trying to figure out, you know, how do I move the system, and seeing that, you know, the hardest of efforts sometimes brings just little progress. And, you know, I kind of wish I could be that person who could, you know, go to the beach and just enjoy more of my retirement. But I'm compelled, and I cannot quit, and I will not quit, and I must not quit because lives are at stake, and I'm so tired of seeing them fall through the cracks and deteriorating and being victimized and, you know, being harmed in jails and prisons. And another thing that bothers me, and I'm hoping they'll change it, and I'm sure you're on board with this, Leona, is that, you know, I've heard talk that they're thinking of upping the age before they send teenagers.
Yeah.
I do not want to see an 18-year-old sent to a prison from a juvenile facility. Their brains aren't developed. It's just, you know, it's just, there's so much wrong.
There's been a lot. Yeah, I've been seeing a lot of actually raising it right up to the age of 25 or 26. But I think one of the states actually was looking at 26. But I think.
Oh, I love it.
Really? And then they were talking about the, you know, with the football, even there was a woman that recently they diagnosed her with the same thing. What is it, the CT or something from getting hit when you're playing football or the sports that they, actually they said, what's his name had it? The one that was supposed to have committed suicide.
Aaron, what's his name?
Yeah.
Aaron Hernandez.
Yeah, well, they've come out with a lot more since then. They found that a lot more people have it. And this most recent one was about 3 or 4 weeks ago was a woman. And I forgot what sport she was playing. But they said that they found out she had it. And she's still living. She's still living. But they were doing some kind of brain thing, and they found out that she, and that was the first woman that they said they found out about this with that. But,
so
yeah,
is that like traumatic brain injury? Is that
From getting hit in the head over, I guess, from years of
something from the concussions.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But
I'll never forget, you know, I had to listen to a hearing at Bridgewater State Hospital in conjunction with my loved one and waiting for his turn to come up. I got to listen to what was happening to other patients. And there was one man who had gotten brain disorder, traumatic brain injury from a motorcycle accident. And, you know, he became violent. And they treated him. You know, these are psychiatrists at a supposed hospital, and they treated him like a criminal. I just cringed. I just cringed.
Awful.
You know,
Yeah.
There has to be more brain studies, and they don't know everything about the brain, but that, you know, there are innovative ways and books and scholarship. Thomas Intel was the director of the National Institution of Health, and he wrote a book, and it's groundbreaking. He's doing new studies and new ways of thinking, you know, and yet I see some well-meaning psychiatrists—they're just kind of stuck. They just do the work, and they don't move forward with anything innovative.
No, and the sad thing about it too is the Mass General Hospital. I really wish that they would have gotten involved, because I'll tell you, a lot of prisoners throughout the country—they're getting diagnosed with antisocial behavior, or being diagnosed with psychological issues that they don't even have. I think a lot of them have post-traumatic stress syndrome, and they don't get diagnosed with that. But they seem to label people in the military that come out with PTSD, but there's a lot of them, I know for a fact, there's a lot in the prison that most likely were victims of post-traumatic stress syndrome or disorder. So they're not getting really diagnosed accordingly, and that's why it would be so good if one of these hospitals would get involved as well and go in and do these independent evaluations.
Yeah, and I know that, like, there's sometimes one psychologist that goes in to visit in the jails or the prisons, and he has, like, a multitude of prisons. So he might see somebody, you know, maybe get to go to one jail once a month. And how can you treat someone? Even at Old Colony Correctional Center, you know, they say the emphasis on mental health, but they very rarely, you know, they'll see somebody for 10 minutes, like, once a month. I know people there, and that's what happens. And how is that mental health focused?
Yeah, it's not possible to do an accurate job, a good job. And more people need to get involved. You know, somebody was talking the other day about the Innocence Project, and I said, you know what people don't realize is that Barry Scheck, the Innocence Project, it seems like it's the only one that everybody that's wrongfully convicted goes to. So naturally, you're not going to get, they're not all going to get the service because there's just not enough Barry Scheck or Innocence Project. And that's the same way it is with the psychologist you're talking about. There needs to be a lot more going in, and they need to spend a lot more time with these individuals than 10 minutes.
Yeah. So, Leona, what do you think, you know, if you had a wish list of three things that you could change tomorrow, what do you think it would be with the jails and the prisons?
Well, I always say it, and I staff petitions, to replace these prisons with long-term residential treatment facilities, mental health treatment facilities, and also the addictions. And that's one of my major wishes, is that they would turn a lot of these people that are in prison and put them in long-term residential treatment facilities. They can serve the same time or half the time that they're serving now, but they would be getting the appropriate treatment. And those who have serial killers, mass murderers, or terrorists, keep them in the prison. My second wish is to categorize these incarcerated individuals and put them in prisons according to their crime, their age, or their age groups. Put the elderly in a separate prison. Put the gang members in a separate prison. Put the youth and the young and men and women in a separate prison. And put the elderly, anybody over 50 or 55 years of age, put them in an elderly prison. But what they're doing is they're throwing them all in together. And it's not right. It's not right.
Yeah, I agree with that. Especially, the elderly, it's too bad, ages, they say ageism is the last, we hear a lot about these culture changes and, inclusivity, but they say ageism is kind of the last group to be respected, and especially these vulnerable people who are incarcerated, most likely if they've been there for years, they haven't really gotten the best of physical care, let alone psychological care. And
exactly.
To group them all together, I think I like your idea. And the residential, my friend Annette, who has called in and
mm-hmm.
spoken, and been a guest. And one of her ideas is just like a nursing home. You have these nursing homes and you have these different rooms and you have the central station where there can be, the caretakers for people. And, maybe it could be secured, but it could, each person would have their own living space and it would be more of a community-minded program, kind of like what you're saying. I love that. It's funny. It's your show, and I'm interviewing you. It's asking you the three things, and you right off the bat, you're so versed in this, Leona. You came up with, these solutions, and this is what I would do, boom, boom, boom. And I often say, I often joke, not really joking, I wish that the family members could run something like Bridgewater State Hospital because, boy, things would change and things would be way, we'd know how to take care of our family members and we'd know how to procure the right care and we'd insist on compassionate care and well-trained staff. And, I wish you and I had the power to do these things.
And like you say, even like they do in the nursing homes, they can have correctional offices or they can have security in wherever anybody's working with the incarcerated, whether it's Bridgewater or places or in the prisons itself, they can have, but make it more humane. Let people, relatives or family members that are experienced or at least have some knowledge of some of these things, let them work with the incarcerated and have the security there to ensure that nothing goes wrong. But to just throw people in prison and like cattle and It just doesn't make sense. It doesn't.
No, it really doesn't.
And another thing that I think they should do is I think they should make it mandatory for anybody incarcerated to be involved in some kind of educational program. And whether it be workshops on mental health issues or whether it be higher education or whether it be I know GED seemed to be the one thing that they've always done, like everybody's supposed to have been school dropouts. But what they need to do is they need to make it mandatory so everyone that's in prison, that goes to prison, mandated to be involved in rehabilitation and in education.
Yeah, and it shows a certain respect to the inmates if they're offered these educational programs. It shows that, you know, you feel that they're bright and they're capable. Our last art class at Bridgewater State Hospital with the families, we were doing the Play-Doh. The assistant administrator bought oodles and oodles of colors and colors of Play-Doh, and she had a YouTube video on how to build creative creatures. And, you know, they were fantastical and mythical. So what I did at the beginning of each of my art classes, I give some art history, very simple. You know, I was an adjunct professor, a college professor of art history and decorative arts and all kinds of art-related subjects. So I always give them a little bit of, context. I tell them what conceptual art is. It's just about the concept, the idea, because, you know, we're limited in, you know, to the materials we might be able to use and I make the assignments really fun, but I do a written agenda, and I always provide some art history context. I simplify it somewhat, but I also give them some really meaty concepts. So, you know, one of the concepts last night was about low relief versus high relief, because we were sculpting. And, you know, and I explained what low relief was. For example, if you have a ball of clay and you were going to build a face upon it, you know, if it were shallow, that would be low relief or bas relief. And then if you were going to do, you know, something with that projected farther out, that would be high relief. So that was what they were supposed to think about a little bit while they were having the fun assignment. And I also talked about pre-dynastic Egypt and how, you know, although most of the clay works and the vessels were utilitarian, they would do some mythical and imaginary creatures or beasts. And, you know, that was the theme, doing creative creatures last night. So I gave them like 1, 2, 3 different kinds of little concepts just to think about, but it's really to make them feel important. And I could see some, it was just sort of going over their heads a little bit, but I could see some of the patients just eyes lit up, intensely listening, you know, wanting to learn, and I want to make them feel important. So that's why I do a written agenda, just like I did when I was teaching a college course.
Exactly.
And, you know, because I want them to feel like I believe in them. I know that they're intelligent, and they are. So, we just need more of that.
You know what? We need more people, as they say, like yourself. And I'm not just saying that, just to be saying that.
Thank you. Thank you, Leona.
Mentally ill people, a lot of times we tend to think that they are incapable of being able to do anything. But projects like you're talking about, any kind of project, even coloring, to give them something to do to make them feel more alive. And that's what happens. We tend to take these people that are mentally ill and we overlook their abilities. You know, we look at their disabilities, but we overlook their abilities and their capabilities. And so doing things like that, and those are interesting things I would enjoy doing. You know, learning about ancient Egypt and things like that is something that we all should, you know, but that's why I say it should be mandatory. Everybody that goes into prisons, if they're mentally ill or not, there should be some kind of mandatory programs for them and to make
Correct.
Them feel like they're part of society, which they are.
Yep.
That is awesome.
That's true. What do you think? You know, I think one of the things very important to myself is being productive. And I think that makes a person feel good if they're accomplishing something. But I also know, you know, I've heard you speak about the exploitation of cheap labor within the prison. So how do we balance that, you know, giving some of these inmates something productive? Because most of them are going to come home at some point. So how do we help them to be productive? And, you know, why must we punish and it be a penal system and not allow them to thrive? You know, they're just surviving. And you know, if you're just at that level where you're surviving and having to watch out for your own safety, you're not going to thrive. You're not going to grow. So what do you think might be some of the answers? You know, and this is what I'm looking for the answer to, on how to, you know, help them to be productive within the incarceration.
You just mentioned something. You said a lot of these prisoners will be coming out soon. And what I would, if I was the commissioner or if I was a legislative member, I would take these people that are soon to be released, and I would take them out, and this is like a pilot project. I would take them out into the communities and look for any kind of buildings that are dilapidated or that are not being used, and I would put them to work on renovating these buildings. And then the pilot project, take a certain amount of prisoners, whether they be mentally ill or not, and bring them into these renovated buildings, and bring in volunteer, if you have to, or even paid staff, psychologists, psychiatrists, you know, medical providers, substance abuse counselors, bring them all in and work with the pilot project with the few that are in this building and see how that works. There's a building in Brockton, Massachusetts. I remember back in 2004, this building is still there and the windows are blown out and everything else. And I remember in 2004 talking to someone at City Hall about renovating that place, putting offices in there, and also having these little studio apartments or whatever for those that were soon to be released. Bring in the students that were going to school for vocational training for building houses and plumbers and carpenters. Bring them in. Bring the former offenders. Bring them all together to work in this building. Fix the building is so huge. It's so big that you can put offices in there, you can put a gym in there, you can put a spa in there. And we all know when you go to a spa or a gym, you feel really good about yourself. You're going to think more about your body, you're going to think more about your mental stimulation. Get these buildings, all these buildings in the streets of Boston and the streets of all over the place, wherever they are, where you find buildings that are being unutilized. And the government used to have surplus properties. I remember when I first started New Vision Organization, I was looking into a lot of these things, and there was a lot of government surplus properties at the time that they were giving away to organizations or whatever. I don't know if they still do. But there's so much out there that we can get the vocational schools to get involved. We could get former prisoners to get involved, advocates to get involved. Renovate all of these buildings and start making use of them. And that's what they don't do. These things are out in the streets dilapidated when there's people in the prisons that could be getting training and, you know, doing some good things.
I'd like to write that down, who you said would be involved. So you would have, besides the advocates, who did you?
They used to build one house a year, the vocational school. The teachers
That's good.
The teachers used to bring in the plumbers, the carpenters, the electricians. I remember when my son was just a baby, but when I was working, my mother said, let me take care of she took care of her grandson. I went to work. My mother said, save your money. And when you put in a foundation, but my father, we weren't rich, but my father had plenty of land. So we all had our own land to build our houses on. And I attended all the Barnstable schools. So my house was the last house they built. But in Barnstable High School had a vocational school where they built one house a year. And my house when I applied, I had a three-bedroom home. Throughout the years, I added two bedrooms in the basement, so I had a five-bedroom home, two living rooms, kitchen, bath. But the teachers brought in the carpenters, the electricians, the plumbers, they came in as a team. The house they built, it cost me $11,000 for the house, and I put in money throughout the years, adding to it. But when that house was sold, it was sold for $250,000. Now, that house was so beautiful. And I'll tell you right now, they don't do it anymore. The vocational schools are not sending these kids out. They're not, and kids are going to get tired of going to school and not being able to do hands-on. So a lot of them are going to drop out. Years ago, when kids dropped out of school, they could join the military. But now you're not going to be able to join the military unless you have a high school diploma or you're in college. And so this is why we have so many kids in the street, so much crime going on, because there's a lot of dropouts and the kids are doing nothing with their time. They don't have anything to do, so they're out there getting involved in gangs and everything else, and that's where crime comes in.
Right.
But get the vocational schools to start working. Get the former offenders, ex-offenders, and those who are caught for DUI or whatever with the courts and they have to do community services, give them that option, too, to work in the community, for the community services, to work with these people that are renovating all of these dilapidated buildings. So that they can start building something other than prisons.
Yeah, I like that idea very much. You know, Leona, when I get this topic on the table with the sheriff department, the sheriffs, would you be willing to maybe talk about a few of these pilot programs as a guest on a Zoom meeting?
I would love to.
You could join FEMI and you know, mention a couple of these things. They're great ideas. Great ideas.
And you know what? Crime is down.
I often think they need to be productive to feel good about them. If we're going to build up people and rehabilitate, you know, we have to have programs like this. I like that with the vocational schools, you know, even getting the students involved. Oh, well, that might be tricky if they're minors. But, you know, as you said, the teachers and the carpenters and the plumbers and giving skills. One of the good things, you know, I'm a big fan of Superintendent David Tuttle of the Worcester County Jail. He and Sheriff Louis Evangelitis are very humane. So what happened is this RV company, local, somewhere in the, you know, Worcester region, the regional, in the Worcester area, they couldn't get enough help to repair their RVs. They couldn't get enough skilled workers. So they went to David Tuttle. I don't know how they ended up going to him, but they said, look, if you will buy an RV, a recreational vehicle, will come in and we will teach, you know, some of the inmates how to repair them. And he went out and bought it. He, you know, and good, thank goodness for Sheriff Louis Evangelitis, because, you know, he's handpicked and he wants humane treatment. So they're actually training some of the inmates on how to, you know, how to repair RVs, and they probably chose people who will be getting out, you know, with somewhere in the nearish future, because that makes sense, because then the RV company is going to hire them. So how good is that?
And you mentioned, too, the students, you know, working around the prisoners, that wouldn't be appropriate, but do it in shifts. Have the students going in and doing certain things when the others are not there. And, you know, in shifts, in shifts and at different times. It's just like, okay, when you think about the GLBTs, a lot of people say they don't want the gays in the female bathrooms or the male bathrooms. It's so simple. So put in a bathroom for the GLBTs. But, you know, there's so many different ways to work around things. And the students could go in and they work on some of the areas in these areas when the others are not around. And like you say, they'd be with their professors or their teachers, you know, the carpenters, the electricians, and all that. But give them, like you say, give them something to do and let them feel important. I was going to say, too, Franz Dow, whenever you have these meetings, if you ever do a virtual meeting, that maybe even Franz Dahl, the former 27-year warden, he probably would be very, very anxious or very receptive to speaking about how
That would be great, Leona, because, you know, we are working with Carrie Hill, and we all like her at FEMI. She's actually a shaker and a mover, and she really is trying to get good changes, and she's the president of the Sheriff's Association. So, you know, it's just a matter, we're just kind of getting it established now. In the newsletter, you saw some of our goals. It's in this month's newsletter. So once that gets established, you know, a few months down the road, I plan to start pitching these pilot programs. So if we could get Franz Dowd and yourself, you know, to weigh in, you know, we can designate a certain amount of time for each of you that you think, you know, you would need. And you could meet with the sheriffs of the counties. I think there's 14 counties in Worcester or in Massachusetts.
Yeah, that would be good to work, everybody working in unity to, in solidarity to try to see positive changes in Massachusetts. And this is something that it's very much needed. But Franz will be on tomorrow at 2 o'clock Eastern time, and he's going to be talking about some of the, you know, some of the things too, the interaction between, guards and prisoners. And he's been talking a lot about a lot of different things, but we need to do something. And if you're talking about sheriffs and any legislative members, anyone that's willing to come together, Department of Mental Health, NAMI, any of them, this is what we need. So we're running out of time, Donna. I want to thank you so much for coming on and talking about all these things.
I'm really happy I saw your email, and it said I'm going on in 45 minutes, and I said, ooh, did I miss it? And I called in, and there you are.
As for your newsletter, I would love to have you post it on Facebook, even if you post it on my Facebook page. I'll speculate it. Beautiful newsletter, and everything was so detailed, and I just loved it. So you're doing an awesome job, Donna, and I hope and pray that we get more people like you on board. I really do.
Thank you, Leona. Well, you are an inspiration to me, and I have to tell you something funny. I know our time is short, but I gave my testimony, you know, a couple weeks ago, and I wanted to have as much clout as I could. So I was talking. Let me see if I can find the line really, really quick, because you'll get a kick out of it. I co-opted Leona, and I'll tell you how. So, you know, I wanted to have as much credentials as I could, and I can't see it. I thought I printed it out. But I was saying that, you know, I'm often asked by many people why that the reports with the Disability Law Center go on and on and on saying they're non-compliant with the law. And I said, I have no answer. But when I was saying that, I said, as an advocate, and I threw in and a radio podcaster, because I just wanted that little bit of extra clout to get their attention. So I co-opted you a little bit for my testimony. I'm a little bit of a part-time radio podcaster. What's that, Leona?
I said, I thank you for everything you're doing, Donna. I really do appreciate it, and I appreciate everything about you. I really do.
Well, that goes two ways. I'm a big Leona fan, and you honestly are in my heart. Your son is in my heart. You know, I carry these incarcerated men, mostly men, because that's who I've dealt with, but, you know, women as well. And, you know, I'm so grateful that, you know, you're doing what you can. And I know, you know, the needle moves slowly. Sometimes it seems like we can't even help our own loved ones, but we are making a difference, Leona, and I'm very grateful for you. You know, you've been nothing but an inspiration to me.
Well, I'll tell you, like you said about yourself, you never got to retire, and that's the way I feel. I never really got to retire. to this day. But I am considering giving up the organization and focusing more on the radio and bringing awareness. But Donna, we are out of time, and I want you to tell your husband that we're sympathetic of what he went through, and I hope he heals quickly. And
thank you. You
both, you're a blessing, and I just want you to know that you're truly appreciated. So hopefully, Donna, you'll be able to listen in or call in tomorrow when Franz Dow is on.
I'm going to put it on my calendar. You know, I've been helping my husband field the doctor's appointments, but I'll have free time tomorrow at 2. So I'm writing it down, and I'm planning to listen.
And feel free to call in as well. And he's a really awesome person, and I think that you will enjoy listening to what he has to say. And like I said, he would be willing, I'm sure, to work with you and anyone else in Massachusetts, as he is in Texas right now. So we will hear him tomorrow and see what happens from there. And Donna, as I said before, you're always welcome. Anytime you want to come on the show or even do a show, I have a couple of days that I don't use the studio. I've been backing away
Great.
A little bit. I've had a lot of things on, but the studio is always open to you and your crew. Your group, if anytime you want to use it.
Thanks, Leona. I have a fun idea that I'm working on that I will let you know as soon as I get the details finished.
Good enough. Okay, thank you so much. Audience, we are now going to end this episode, and I thank you all for listening in. Once again, Donna Wynette, families, friends, and individuals for the mentally ill, and she will be coming on often. I'm sure all of you are getting to know her. She is awesome, so stay tuned. Thank you once again for listening in, and we are now going to end this episode.
God bless you, Leona. Thank you.
You too, Donna.